Mini episode 1820 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode 1820. You have with you here today FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and Derek Allen. And we are doing this together here for the first time on video. We've been doing the video platform here throughout 2025 to this point. First time we've been able to welcome in Derek for that. And we're talking the first wave of trading and free agency for the NFL once the 2025 calendar year began in earlier March. And so we're going to be taking a look at some of the early winners and losers thus far. And always great to be able to bring in Derek and get his perspective on things here. And so, Derek, without any further ado, good to have you on, my man. Glad to welcome you to our new video platform here. I've been looking forward to doing this with all of you guys. It's great to have you in for the first time this way.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Rick. You know, I'm jealous of the background. I'm jealous of the shirt. I'm clearly very underprepared, but it's definitely a trip to do this after we've done. I don't know how many we've done over the phone, but it's more than a few. So switching to this now is crazy, but it feels like feels good, feels right.
You're doing fine. You have a nice dignified background there. I don't know that anybody would call my background dignified, but I did take your advice. You did say that one of the earlier looks that I had here was a little too busy with the logos. So we decided to go to basically the banners and the rafters approach here. So I appreciate you having weighed in on that and helped me to do it in a better way.
Of course.
That was a plus. And great to be able to get into any of the NFL coverage with you as per always, and taking a look at some of the movement here in free agency and in the trades that have happened thus far. And it does feel like in a lot of ways that some of the trades have been some of the bigger and more impactful aspects of this, and subsequently maybe some of the players getting released a little bit later in the day. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is still on the market here at this point. But and we don't know how long that's going to take to kind of play out. But Joey Bosa finding himself on the market and then subsequently signing with Buffalo. Outside of that, again, a lot of the trades have probably been a little bit more impactful as far as some of the acquisitions. Geno Smith making his way to Las Vegas. I don't think any of us necessarily saw that one coming. So just what are your early kind of top level kind of thoughts on what we've seen thus far with the free agency and trades?
I think the first thing that jumps out is really like the you know, those top playoff teams that we had from last year are still there, if not better. And everyone that was, you know, mid-range or bad really didn't change. Like I feel like we're only in a way just gearing up for a repeat of last season, which was fine. Last season was fine. Don't get me wrong. But I just didn't see, you know, like I would almost look at like Washington, right, coming into last year. That was a, you know, coming, and granted, they had obviously a great rookie that they got, so the draft will probably paint this picture a little more. But just after free agency, I mean, everything's looking pretty much the same. The quarterback market was relatively interesting. I agree with you, Geno leaving was interesting. I mean, Seattle and LA basically did a trade with Kupp and Metcalf, even though it was a re-signing, obviously. But it was interesting. And I think when you look at the division still, like, there's still a lot of that concentrated power in like where it was last year in the NFC North, and then obviously the AFC North, and then you have a couple fledglings here and there. The Patriots might do something now that, you know, they're retooling again, but overall, I mean, it's your regular your usual suspects that are looking like they're going to be just as good next year after the signings. Buffalo the Ravens, obviously. So I don't know. It wasn't as big of a shakeup as, you know, I guess I hoped for.
Well, and I think that was because when you look at the caliber of players that were out there at the end of the day, it didn't necessarily really merit that. I mean, when you're looking at Cooper Kupp being one of the bigger things to have happen here, when he had sort of played his way out of favor with the Rams, not because there was anything necessarily wrong with him, but just that the Rams kind of figured that they'd gotten the best out of him that they were going to get, particularly for what his price tag is. So, you know, there wasn't a whole lot, I think, at the quote-unquote top of the market that was going to really do a lot to kind of, you know, resettle anything in the league. I will say, since you mentioned Washington, so I go back a year with Washington and then the year before with Houston. In neither instance did I pick those teams to make the playoffs, but I thought they would be a little bit closer than a lot of people thought they would be. Maybe seven. I think I said 7 wins for Washington last year, and I think 8 wins for Houston the year before. And people were wanting to have me drug tested for saying 8 wins. But the reason being, when you look at what the team's doing in the offseason, filling needs, and you talked about the quarterback. I mean, Houston the year before, they got Stroud. Last year with Washington, they got Daniels. And that's what people look at. But in both instances, the organization was doing a lot to fill the other spots on the roster. So who's doing that this year thus far heading into the draft? New England has filled 5 different spots really since then. I mean, they've been the most active team as far as being out there trying to fill holes. And I'm counting this on a net basis because sometimes, yeah, you know, if a team replaces a guy that they let go that's the same position, I'm not counting that. The Bears did that at 3 different spots, edge, center, and guard. So the Bears have been pretty busy in that. Interestingly, Detroit right now is one of the teams that hasn't done much of anything either way. So you look at that, and obviously they're pretty content with the roster that they have. But a team like Chicago that was basically in the cellar last year, retooling with a new regime here, at least with the coaching staff and everything that they want to infuse into that, and making the moves to kind of show, even going into the draft, they look like a team that could be poised, albeit it's going to be very hard in the toughest division in football. But they're a team right now that I think that's doing what it's got to do to put themselves in position to make that leap.
Yeah, 100%. And I think you can see it how a lot of teams invested in like the offensive line market very early on. I think those were some of the biggest biggest splash signings early on. Because I mean, that's the trend sort of where the league's going with run first teams, right? You look at the Eagles and what they did with Saquon. You look at what Detroit does with their Sonic and Knuckles combo. So I think there wasn't as much of a run at running backs, but I think that's somewhat expected because the way it seems to go now is teams are basically hoping to just draft a good running back, get a good 3-4 years out of them, then go to the next one. So that wasn't as surprising, but the line for sure. And I think that's where we're seeing it. Maybe that's why I wasn't, you know, the most exciting. It hasn't been the most exciting offseason, but and you can see that, like you said, a lot of teams filled needs, and then some teams it looked like kind of they're doing a bit of a sell-off. The Niners are in a weird spot for some reason. That was the biggest one that jumped out at me, though. That's sort of how they've been, at least in the last, and during the Shanahan era of, you know, they'll have a few down years. They'll be like, you know, first in the draft, and then they'll come out, be one of the best teams. They're very cyclic, cyclical. But other than them, I didn't really see a ton of other teams doing, looking to be poised in some sort of like sell off restart thing. A lot of teams were either, you know, filling needs tremendously or kind of just sitting by and kind of waiting for the draft. I think the next, honestly, biggest wave of free agency will come after the draft.
I think so. And I'm going to call this an example of great minds think alike, as opposed to when I showed you off air here. I know you weren't able to squint well enough to see on my spreadsheet here, but San Francisco, they're the only team I have listed with a negative number right now, -1. They're down one position than they were before all of this started. And part of that was they were a team that was sort of getting into cap hell with some of the expensive players that they had there. And there was going to be a little bit of a retooling that was going to be necessary. But I think also they concluded internally that what happened last year was not a fluke and that they were in a position where they needed to kind of I'm not going to say necessarily take a knee for 2025, but to not be as aggressive. I mean, for a team that was in two Super Bowls in recent years, to basically take a year. And if you do it the right way, and San Francisco's been pretty much a model organization, I think, since Lynch has gotten there as general manager and with Shanahan as the coach. In about a year or so, unless you've really screwed yourself over with, let's say, a Deshaun Watson contract, then you could be able to bounce back in a period of time here. So San Francisco looks like they might be kind of settling in for that, and maybe a little bit in the way of reduced expectations for this season.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I mean, they're like I said, they do. I feel like I've seen this song and dance from them every other year. I am surprised the stats lined up with me, though. Like, I kind of – That was just beer math in my head there. So I'm surprised the numbers actually added up.
You intuited what was going on here, yeah, because I have a number of teams at zero as far as not any better or not any worse. A couple of them, of course, from the AFC North, which has been pretty dormant thus far. Cincinnati, Cleveland, Pittsburgh among them. Baltimore is only at a plus one. Cincinnati, everybody's going to give credit for them. Kind of surprisingly, I think, keeping both Chase and Higgins, which they needed to do. But again, they're so cheap that I don't think anybody necessarily really expected it to happen. Again, they still have a long ways to go defensively. I think capping their defensive coordinator, that's only going to take them so far. You're not going to really have much in the way of improvement from within. So they're going to have to go pretty strong in the draft in that direction. I will tell you that FDH Lounge dignitary Joe Stazak, who has recently become a columnist for Heavy.com covering the Philadelphia Eagles and all things Philadelphia sports, he's had to sort of dispel some panic in the city of brotherly love about what their offseason has been. But again, I'm looking
at the Super Bowl. Like, relax.
Yeah, yeah. Like, people are screaming for Howie Roseman's head. Like, what the hell are you people talking about? Like, it's been a little bit tough, and they've had to let some guys go. And interestingly enough, as I look at Arizona, I've got you down as a plus one at this point. Albeit, I had Edge as your most important need. You sign away Josh Sweat from Philadelphia. So of course he knows his old defensive coordinator, your head coach there, Gannon. But again, Philadelphia's had a little bit of shuffling to do here at this point. But, you know, lest we forget the way that they've killed it in the draft the last couple of years, really all throughout, I've always felt like anywhere in the first four rounds, you should be able to get starting caliber players. And Philadelphia has been the organization that's nailed that better than anybody the last couple of years. So I've got Philadelphia as a plus one heading into the draft here at this point. I don't understand what these spoiled Philadelphia fans that are crying about this are even talking about.
I don't know. And they didn't even have to, besides just the fact that they just won the Super Bowl. I mean, look at the division they're in. Look at New York's big splash signing was getting, you know, Mr. Unlimited and Jameis. Like, and then obviously Dallas is still just, I don't know why they don't do anything. Like, Jerry Jones just doesn't feel like spending money anymore. Obviously Washington, you know, is a solid competitor. But, I mean, I don't see them even with the additions they made. They're not going to have the same season. Like, Jane Daniels will have a slump. I don't think it'll be major. They're still definitely a playoff team. But, you know, look at C.J. Stroud here this year. The Texans were okay. They weren't bad. I think Washington will do the same. So if you're the Super Bowl winning team and you look at who the three teams you're going to play, you know, six times, you don't need to necessarily retool. So, Philly fans are Philly fans. They're who they are.
Well, the thing with Dallas, which I know must be, painful in your household with what the state of the franchise has been the last couple of years. A friend of the show, Dan McDowell, from the great Dumb Zone podcast in the Dallas, Fort Worth area, and a great guy that I had a cup of coffee with in public radio in Athens, Ohio, a long time ago. He's made the observation on his show that it's one of those things where Jerry Jones, through the course of the offseason, he'll talk about what the cap, challenges are. Oh, yeah, we got the money, but we're still going to have to retain Dak, and we're still going to have to do this and that. And then on the eve of the season, he makes the deal that could have been made in March, but he makes it at a time where, he has the excuse the whole way of why he can't spend money. He makes the same deal that he could have made 6 months ago, and he does this repeatedly with the big contracts. So it's a whole thing. It's a shell game. Everybody always say, like, oh, the Cowboys, they'll spend what needs to be spent. He somehow maintains that image when, in fact, these guys on that show are consistently pointing out it's the exact opposite. And that I think as far as, like, discretionary money, the money that you could spend above and beyond, you know, what's available if you do things a certain way, they've been, like, second lowest in the league on that. Now, I will say, spending the most amount of money and playing the shell game and rearranging the contracts doesn't necessarily get you a doggone thing, because toward the forefront, if not at the forefront of the NFL the last several years, Jimmy Haslam's Cleveland Browns shuffling the contracts and getting more in. We freed up more money to spend this year. Well, it got them a 3-14 record last year. So it's no guarantee of success. You have to have competent people in the front office and a competent coaching staff. But if you're doing it like Jarrah's doing in Dallas, then you really have no chance at all, because that's a roster where, again, I called it coming into last year. They've been stars and scrubs going back as far as the eye could see. But it looked to me like this is the worst version of stars and scrubs they've tried to trot out there in a long time. And indeed, that's what happened. I had them on the just barely missing the playoffs, and it was more of an implosion than even I saw coming.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it necessarily applies to Dallas, but I would be curious looking at where everyone's cap space is right now heading into the draft, and mm-hmm. then do, you know, come back at the end of free agency and see if there was a strategy there. See if, and maybe it does include Dallas, but like to see if some of these teams were strategic in, or some of these front offices were strategic in, okay, we're going to fill a couple of needs now. We're going to see how the draft pans out. We know who's who still has needs. We can maybe do some wheeling and dealing there. Maybe someone needs our pick to fill a need that we don't need. There's some trades there. And then obviously post-draft, whoever has the most money, you know, continues going. I do think there is still some, there's some strategy still happening across the league with some of these front offices that have been a little bearish in this initial stage.
Yes, and I will circle back to what I said before, that I didn't think it was that great of a free agency class overall, and that even the players that have changed hands in some of the trades thus far, you know, few of them are necessary. I mean, Joey Bosa is not at his peak anymore, et cetera, et cetera. So there is something to be said for holding back on this a little bit and not wildly overcommitting, because that's what New England did a couple of years ago. If you remember that, I think it was, you remember that one off season where it was like, oh, New England's going all in. They were trying to make up for like a decade plus of bad drafting. That, for as much as everybody always put over Belichick for all of that kind of stuff, their drafts had been pretty crappy for a long time. I remember like Hunter Henry, and I forget who the other tight end was, but they threw like huge amounts of money at two different tight ends and this and that and whatever. Like, you're trying to
fill Gesicki, I think, right?
I think it was Gesicki, yeah. So I was like, you can't do it the way they did it, because I looked at it that offseason. I'm like, they spent a ton of money, but what did they really get? So you do have to get the bang for your buck. Now, I will say also, as we're looking at this in terms of, if you look at Houston and Washington the last 2 years, who is a candidate to be that team this year? I'm not necessarily saying that they are, but if you look at Tennessee, they have filled a couple of spots here, albeit I don't know that they necessarily needed to fill a spot at guard, but they did anyways. They did a tackle and they did at safety. So they've added 2 to 3 starters heading into the draft, when they're likely to get Cam Ward. And as I said before, in the last 2 years, it was Stroud and it was Daniels, and that's the first thing everybody looks at for those teams' improvements in that year. If Tennessee has a big 2025, the first thing people are going to look at is Cam Ward. But they also seem to be setting the table in other ways to be able to take that kind of a step forward, and we'll see what they do in the draft in addition to what they do in the first round.
Yeah, in principle, I agree. I'm still so bearish on this quarterback class. Like, I don't believe in the Cam Ward hype. Honestly, like, obviously, Abdul Carter has his knee injuries. Otherwise, I would say that was the strongest pick in the draft. But I still think whoever gets Genty is going to be off to an amazing start. But in terms of, again, going back to quarterbacks, like, I just don't see it. And with Tennessee's obviously massive need there, and again, regardless that this is becoming, you know, a little more of a run first league, but you still need a stud at quarterback. If you look at everyone that was in the playoffs last year, like, that was all of them. Granted, whether you call Darnold or not or stud is up to debate, but stats-wise he was, and win percentage he was. But I just don't know if I see that with this group. Like, people's, like, Cam Ward's maybe the only one that I could see, like, yeah, maybe. But other than that, so that's where I kind of – I don't know if any team is going to be able to make that huge – that massive jump in the draft, because if those teams that were at the bottom are – in need of a quarterback, and they're not going to – I don't think they're going to fill it in this draft class. But I could be wrong. I didn't think overly highly of Daniels. Granted, he had obviously won the Heisman, so, you know, I wasn't completely bearish. And I don't know if I was super high on Stroud either. But, you know, I don't see a Stroud or a Daniels sitting in the wings this year.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, it's the weirdest thing. I wasn't high on Stroud either. And I say that as somebody where, again, my dad's an OSU season ticket holder, and we don't make it to that many games, you know, still. He disperses most of the tickets, but I'm seeing them all on TV. And he just never wowed me until I think it was the Georgia game. It was the Peach Bowl game, the national semifinals. And that was where he and Ryan Day just sort of unclenched the butt cheeks because they had to, the same thing Ryan Day would do 2 years later when he was backed up against the wall. It's amazing what happens when you actually play to win and you actually have an attack-oriented offense. So he basically showed me in one game that he was capable of doing that when he hadn't really shown it to me before. So I was, for the most part, with you on Stroud and pleasantly surprised at the way that he turned out. I am somebody that, again, tends to be, I love that old term, the bitter clinger on what I think about guys, and I will hang on to my opinion. I hung on to my opinion all throughout this pro career about Jared Goff. I never wavered on him. And I guess my equivalent at this point would be, I know he's probably going to go in the third round, and it would probably be a reach to, it would be a reach to take him in the first and maybe in the second, but I am still a bitter clinger on Quinn Ewers. I really think that guy can do it. Ben Chu, our FDH Lounge dignitary, accuses me of falling in love with the highlight reel. And maybe I do. I'm a highlight reel guy. What the hell? Yeah, that's in my profile. I'm a highlight reel guy. But he can make every throw. And there aren't many of those guys.
I don't see it. So if there was some equitable bet we could make right now, I would do it.
But I'm on an island.
I like Quinn. I hope he does well, but I don't see it. Again, I do not see it with really any of this quarterback class besides, like, Cam Ward is the only maybe. But
yeah,
again, when we look at the draft, and it, again, I think the quarterback class is not great, but when you look at the rest of it, I wonder, especially when we're looking at we were talking about Cincinnati earlier, still having that massive need across their entire defense, if that's really where they're looking to fill it. If they're looking – and does that – if Cincinnati is looking at the draft to fill their needs on the other side of the ball, are they willing to trade away pieces? And do these other GMs know that? Like, that's kind of what – that's kind of – I think I – my prediction right now is I think it's going to be a heavier trade-based draft than – you know, maybe years past because of this inequity, and some teams went all out and some teams didn't. So I think there's some sort of chess match playing. I could be dead wrong, but, you know, we usually have a couple going on in the first round, but they're usually just picks and not players. I wonder if we're going to see a bigger, maybe a few more player type draft or, excuse me, trades going on in the draft.
Yeah, possibly, and possibly even some trades yet to drop before the draft. So
something
that I'm going to get into, this was texted to me not long before we started recording here. So
it's breaking news, it's a scoop.
Let's just call it rumors, but it's a rumor that comes, interestingly enough, from an old cohort of mine back in the old Sports Talk Network days. So this is not a name that is known nationally, but in the greater Cleveland area, Bruce Drennan is a local radio legend. He was somebody who came to the Sports Talk Network for a period of time back when it was going there. And I overlapped with him, and I had the joy of co-owning a fantasy baseball team with him 1 year. Took years off my life. You don't want to co-own a team with Bruce. But so I never really much heard him refer to sources back in the day very much, so I don't know. But I get this out of the blue not long before we start recording. I think it was a good old Ben Chu sent it to me. This was on Twitter, that he, on his local show today, he does a locally oriented podcast that is a simulcast on local cable TV. He was going to be breaking that evidently there is a Browns Cowboys Dak Prescott deal afoot, which I just, as a bitter Browns fan in exile, I'm just rooting for maximum chaos right now until everybody.
Deshaun going to Dallas would actually make perfect sense.
Now, I don't know if that's, I mean, that probably would have been teased in the whole thing here if Dak was going the other, or I mean, if Deshaun was going the other way. I don't know if that's the case. And I don't know how you afford Dak's overpriced contract if you already have Watson, because the team is already dealing with some cap stuff. So, I mean, this is one of these things where, with all due respect to Bruce on this one here, you know, it would take some fancy footwork to pull that one off. But that notion has to be something that would be shocking to you. It was to me when I heard about it.
I could see it, especially with how calm Jerry's been, or how, I guess, inactive they've been in this first segment of free agency. Maybe Jerry's cooking something up. I doubt it, but now I'm going to be looking out for this. This is fascinating. I love this.
Well, and I didn't get a chance to, I just saw like the preview of it. So as far as what Bruce actually said on air, I'm sure I'll catch up with it later on. For a couple of my friends who are still really on the Browns bandwagon, I gleefully texted that to them. Like, hey, what are you guys thinking about this? So yeah, when you're feeling bitter about what a team has done, there's nothing that you love more than doing of spreading the bad news about things like that to the other fans, being the skunk at the garden party. But there aren't too many people that are still that optimistic about the Browns. Although FDH Lounge dignitaries, Jason Jones and Chris Galloway are among the two. So they were recipients of that text from me, like, hey, did you see what Bruce was tweeting out today? So, yeah, that'll be interesting to see how it plays out. But, yeah, like you said, everything ultimately leading up to draft night. And we are going to have some announcements to be made in the not-too-distant future here about the unprecedented level of draft coverage we are going to be doing with this show. We always do a preview show and a recap show. Of course, myself, Jason Jones, Chris Galloway. And we're going to have some bonus coverage as well. And I know from talking to you, you're going to be part of that also. So I look forward to being able to talk about that a little bit more in the weeks ahead as we come up to the draft. Were there any other thoughts that you had about what we've seen with the free agency and thus far the trades that that we hadn't gotten to yet?
I was curious your thoughts on Minnesota, specifically the decision to stand behind JJ McCarthy instead of sticking with Sam Darnold. Now, I don't know if maybe Sam Darnold was saying, I'm leaving unless you give me a massive contract. If that's the case, then, I mean, I understand it makes sense for them. But if maybe he just wanted something, I don't know, something smaller, I know they've seen McCarthy in practice, but you just went to the playoffs with Darnold. Like, it didn't end the greatest, but, you know, you're just going to trust it all on a guy that I guess he's not a rookie anymore, but a rookie that's never played a snap in the regular season. I just thought that move was almost a step back after the year they had. And I don't know.
Well, look, I mentioned before about Jared Goff. Another guy that I've been a bitter clinger on is Sam Darnold. I thought the Browns should have drafted him in 2018. The irony is I seem to be one of the few people that wanted them to draft Watson in 2017, albeit nobody was as violently against the deal they ultimately made as I was. I wanted them to take Goff in 2016, trying to popularize locally the phrase, turn your head and cough for Goff. But in 2018, I wanted Darnold rather than Baker Mayfield with that pick. So I've never wavered on this guy, with all due respect to my dear friend, the proprietor of Sportsology, and my big brother in new media, FDH Lounge dignitary Russ Cohen. With all due respect to him and his Jets, they ruined him. The Panthers ruined him. I just wasn't sure if he could be salvageable at this point, right? A lot of times guys just get too damaged from the experiences. So I was agnostic about how he would do in Minnesota last year. I said so on our preview before the season when we went division by division, me and Chris Galloway. I said, I don't know if he's too busted at this point to be able to do it. But there was something there that got wasted previously. Well, we saw that for the better part of last year anyways. He didn't end so great, but whatever. So I kind of agree with you on that one because it's – let's talk about the other side of what you said there. McCarthy, I thought that was a big reach for him last year in the draft. I'm not a big fan of, you know, it just – you know, who are they going to take next? Jim or Fredette? I mean, are we doing it just on college resumes here? Like, I don't really understand that whole thing. Silly season is when he really sort of climbed up the draft boards here. And I'm never a proponent of that. Like, oh, well, when we were actually watching him play, we thought he was a third round pick. But now that it's February, I think he's a first rounder. McCarthy just seemed like a classic silly season rise up the board guy to me. So I never really saw it in him. So I'm with you on that. Now, that being said, Minnesota in the course of the offseason here, you know, they have, you know, done some things here with the roster. They upgraded at the center position. They don't have a whole lot in the way of roster holes here. They've done a pretty good job with that. The funny thing is who the Browns think they are, that's who Minnesota actually is. And they've done it with guys that they've stolen away from the Browns front office. Minnesota does the money ball thing that the Browns are always aspiring to with that Joe D. Podesta and everybody else out in Berea, except Minnesota actually does it successfully. And so they make the money ball thing work an awful lot. And I know money ball is part of the calculus here, rookie contract and all of
that.
But I'm with you. You had a bird in the hand with Sam Darnold. He took you to the playoffs. And unfortunately, the way the season ended, it makes it a little bit easier for them to be like, see, he could only take us so far. But what makes them think McCarthy's going to take them the rest of the way? So that's the caveat. I like the roster building they're doing, but they couldn't upgrade at running back. They bring back Aaron Jones for 2 years, who was sort of the epitome of like the league average guy to me. Now, again, the caveat is what do they do in the draft? This is a pretty good running back class. One would think if you're Minnesota, you might be looking in that direction to get a little bit more pizzazz in there with Jones, who's not getting any younger. But yeah, I'm with you on Minnesota. And in this tough division, which I will say it again, I've said it on the show previously. You called it last year when we did our traditional post week one breakdown about that the NFC North is going to be the toughest division in football. And I think I made the point on the show subsequently. I did a breakdown, I think, after the first 6 weeks of the season, the four leaders in football on the whole margin of victory were all from that division. Chicago got off to a pretty good start, and I guess the wins they had must have been blowouts, and the losses they had must have been close. You'll never see that again, where four teams from the same division that far into the season are leading the league in margin of victory. So it's really quite a thing here where Minnesota, I mean, that's sort of the epitome of this. And this is a phrase that I use an awful lot in sports and in other ways, that if you're standing still, you're moving backwards. And if Minnesota's standing still or even taking a slight step backwards, that's going to be a big step backwards in that division, especially with Chicago getting better.
100%. Yeah, the draft will be interesting for them, and maybe they will do something. Maybe they like a quarterback sitting in the wings somewhere as a backup. Maybe they like someone more, and they're like, we'll bounce between McCarthy and someone else. The running back piece for sure to back up Jones. But yeah, I mean, again, I get it to a degree. The same thing you said with the whole Moneyball strategy. Like, clearly, like, we've seen it now. The league is trending. At least front offices are trending and building off of rookie contracts in general, but obviously building around a strong rookie contract. We've seen it obviously with Houston. And Washington's doing it right now. But yeah, it's an untested rookie. It's not even we got a few games with him and he was like, oh, he showed some promise. Like, you know nothing of him in the regular season. And now he's hurt himself. So I don't know. That makes me a little worried about Minnesota because they are one of my favorite, I guess, teams outside of my own. But yeah, other than that, overall, yeah, everything else I think we've covered. There's, you know, I think the draft is going to be the next wave of dominoes to fall. But yeah, other than that, I mean, some of the quarterback moves were interesting, but nothing really overall stood out that we haven't talked about.
Since you are one of our FDH Lounge dignitaries who's a little more keenly attuned to the gambling scene, I want to put this question out there to you as far as a deep sleeper for the 2025 season. I think I'd seen them maybe at about 35-1 for the Super Bowl. And looking at this here, again, like, I'm not sure that anybody can necessarily come out of the AFC and beat, you know, Philadelphia or Detroit or Green Bay if they take another step forward. So it would be a matter of having to win a game where they would probably be an underdog. But there's a lot of vulnerability there if you look at Kansas City. I think Buffalo's still got vulnerability. Cincinnati hasn't done anything to address that defense yet. I look at the offseason, and again, somehow or another, having addressed two needs, notwithstanding having gotten rid of Tunsil, I'm looking at Houston. And if you can find them shot? Like 30 to 1, 35 to 1, yeah, like,
yeah, I'm seeing them
why not? Because 35, yeah, like, I don't know, man, because, like, you start to play process of elimination on the top contenders in the AFC, and you can you can poke holes in just about all of them at this point. So I realize they have a ways to go after a disappointing regression season last year. But I wonder if it's not a matter of recency bias as opposed to what we thought of them coming into the season when a lot of people had them as not a Super Bowl dark horse, but maybe even quasi-contender. Why can't they be that a year from now? That's kind of what I'm looking at here. So I'm not saying that they're a great bet to make it to the Super Bowl, but as far as a value pick goes, them at 35 to 1, that seems like about as good of a value as you're going to find, no?
No, and I think it's, again, with how crazy, with how much parity there is in the AFC, like, as I have the odds in front of me, I think your best odds with the futures are going to be in the NFC because of that lack of parity. And I, like, what popped out at me, like, obviously the Commanders at plus 1600 is obviously good if you want something a little more sure. But honestly, right now, looking at the Rams at plus 2200, I think that might be my sleeper pick. As much as I hate it as someone in the NFC West, they made the improvements they needed to do. They had a great playoff. They were the only ones that really took that held Philly to the fire. So, I mean, at plus 2200, that's probably the best odds you're going to get in that's something that's reasonable. If you want to go crazy and take a flyer with Houston would probably be a good flyer. If you want to go real crazy with it, maybe Chicago makes the jump, but or maybe Minnesota as well. Minnesota right now is at plus 3,000. So, I mean, you're gambling on McCarthy, no pun intended. But, yeah, I mean, the most realistic long shot right now that's pretty good odds, I would say, honestly, is the Rams.
Interesting. Okay, yeah. The Rams and the NFC, yeah, because they would qualify as a long shot a little bit anyways when you're slotting them behind Philadelphia, Detroit, probably Green Bay, and some of the other teams in there as well. There might be folks that might slot Tampa Bay and Washington ahead of them as well, potentially. But, yeah, we'll have to see how this all goes for the remainder of the trade and free agency period leading up to the NFL draft, which, like I said, we will have extra special coverage before, after, and during the NFL draft. More about that in the time ahead here. Anytime anybody is on, we always like to get in whatever kind of plugs we can for them. And I know you always like to have plugs directed to, of course, your better half here, the great Maya Master. You can find on Twitter at Chaotic Goodest, as well as at Linktree, Chaotic Goodest also as well. The Trillion Dollar Baby, great author, the emerging voice of, as I always say, in the 2020s in areas of health and wellness here. So always want to get all the plugs that we can in there for her, Derek, very, very deserving.
Thank you, absolutely. And if you obviously follow her first, but if you have one extra follow to share on Twitter, you can follow me as well at @dude_tacav, @dude_cav.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And as I always get the joke in there too, not my Cleveland Cavs, the other kind of Cav here, the military kind. But
if I hadn't packed it away, I could have thrown on my Stetson, and then maybe that'd be my thing next time. Maybe after the move for next season.
That's my
staple.
Perhaps you can, yeah. And of all the teams, by the way, when my Cavs were on their West Coast team, of all the teams to stub their toe against, it was your Phoenix Suns recently here. So in an otherwise execrable year, you got that going for you. You took that.
I do have a futures on the Cavs, so
I'm
a Cavs fan for this NBA season.
Good for you. What'd you get us at?
I'd have to look. It's a pretty good line.
If you got in before the season, you're gonna be rich, buddy.
It wasn't before the season. But it was a pretty good line. I got them at I got them at plus 500. So I'll
okay. Yeah. No, that's good. That's good. That was probably not a super early jump in on them, but yeah, no, that's definitely still a good price. And yeah, it's been a season of dreams, certainly in that regard. Much different than it has been for other folks in my geography when it comes to, say, the Cleveland Browns or anything like that. So it's always nice to be able to have something to cheer for here. But again, as always, appreciate having you in here for our football coverage, Derek. Thank you so much for making time for us today.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, Derek. Thank you. And thanks, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge mini episode 1820.